Good morning, members. The Committee on Education Policy and Reform will come to order. We have a quorum present. Members, in your packet is the minutes from the March 2nd meeting. Do I have a motion to approve? Representative Seibert moves to approve the minutes. Are there any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, today on our agenda we have three items. We will take these items in the order that they are presented. The first item is one that was we have spent significant time on this biennium. There are some changes to that bill, and we'll discuss the changes, but we'll move along on this piece of policy and look to vote on it hopefully before 9 a.m. so that we may then complete the rest of the agenda. The plan is to finish the committee hearing by 10 o'clock. On the agenda today, it says if it is not completed, the committee will reconvene after session in room 200. Members, if you would please strike that line. We will not be meeting today after session, right, as we fully intend to complete the agenda today in a reasonable time. So the first bill on the agenda is House File 1273. Representative Demmer, if you would please present your bill and the amendments to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. House File 1273 is something that we have had in front of us in the past. The essence of, first of all, Mr. Chair, I have a delete all amendment that I'd like to move to get the bill in the shape I want it to be.
Members, the amendment is in the back of the packet.
Do I need to move the amendment itself first?
Representative Demmer, you will need to move the amendment.
To move the bill itself first, or the, and then the amendment, or
move the bill, please.
I move House File 1273 be passed and referred to the Committee on K-12 Education Finance.
Representative Demmer moves that House File 1273 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you would, I have a delete all amendment. It is in your packets, I believe. It's A06-1152.
Representative Demmer moves the A06-1152 amendment as a courtesy to the author to get it in the shape he'd like to speak to it. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we're prepared to vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The House File is amended. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the purpose of the bill is very simple. And we'll have lots of conversation, or maybe not so much conversation, we need to move along. The purpose of the bill is very simple. It's to get the teachers and their negotiators and their teacher representatives and the school boards and their representatives to get to an agreement on compensation on the contract before the time school begins. I don't think there is anybody, either at this the membership in the legislature, I don't think there's anybody in the audience, and I don't think there's a teacher in the state of Minnesota that doesn't think it's a great thing to be done negotiating before school starts. One of the basic tenets of our education system is that we're trying to focus on the kids. Students first is what it's all about. And when we get into the school year with our negotiations, that emphasis changes. And this is not about striking. This is not a no strike bill. What it's about is defining parameters within which we get these things done so that we can focus on what needs to be focused on during the school year, and that's educating kids. The first day of school is not like a day starting at work. It's not about going and showing up for a job, neither for the administrators or for the teachers. It's about going and meeting with kids. Teachers are excited. Kids are excited. administrators are excited to be all about the kids. And when we don't have these negotiations done by that time, that whole tenor changes. So with that, Mr. Chair, I think we all know the issue. It's very straightforward. If you support this legislation, then you support having total emphasis and in the business done and getting out with kids. If you don't support this legislation, it's because you think we got more of a jobs program and you think that's more important than what it is for the kids. So that's the bottom line. What the bill does, Mr. Chair and members, is it does one thing. It says you're done negotiating by the time school starts or 90 days after the governor signs the K-12 education finance bill. If you are done negotiating by that time, it says that the school district is eligible for an incentive of $25 per student. If you do not negotiate by that time, one of four things can happen, either to allow you to continue negotiating. Number one, of course, you settle a contract and agree in principle to what the contract is. You can then start school and finish up the contract. Number two, if the school board delays the start of school so that negotiations can continue, that can happen. Number three, if the teachers do elect to strike and delay the start of school, you can continue to negotiate. And number four, if the parties agree to binding arbitration, then school can go ahead and begin and that contract can be finished up. That's the essence of the bill. If the teachers and the school board do not come to agreement and negotiations are suspended, the other thing that happens is the school district's increase in revenue on their formula would not be advanced by the state until the agreement is done in the spring when school negotiations start up again. Negotiations are allowed to begin on March 1st of the year, so the window of time for negotiating in the even number of years is from March 1st until the start of school in the fall. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's the bill. I stand for questions and comments.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. We'll save questions till after testifiers have had a chance to present to the committee. Representative Demmer, do you have a superintendent who said they'd like to testify?
Mr. Chair, I believe he was not able to come this morning.
Right.
He was going to try to rearrange his schedule after the last I talked to him last night, and I don't see him, so it looks like he wasn't able to make that work.
Thank you. At this time, then, I'd ask that Mr. Charlie Kite, representing Massa, please come forward. Good morning, Mr. Kite. If you'd please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Good morning. I'm Charlie Kite with the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. And I do apologize. A superintendent from Southern Minnesota was here last week to testify on this bill, but he just wasn't able to come back today. We'd like to speak just briefly in support of this bill. We support any strategies or well-thought-out strategies that would minimize the disruption to the education process during the school year. And I've been involved personally, and I've watched schools negotiate contracts for many years. And, you know, at some years, the negotiations has a low impact on the education process with not very much stress, so it just kind of rolls along and it gets finished. But I also would like to report that at times when the negotiations are difficult, it causes significant interruption to the process of education. It diverts management significantly away from thinking about how to improve schools. It takes a lot of effort on the part of middle management principals to keep things positive in their schools if they possibly can. And it's very difficult for the teachers as they get emotionally involved in the process as well. So there is a disruption. Right now we have our statute says that we can negotiate until January 15th. The evidence does indicate that having a deadline helps to get the negotiations finished. We don't care for the fact that there seems to be a one-sided penalty on the January 15th date. We also are concerned that it still takes half a year while students are in session for that negotiation to be completed. I would like to reflect very quickly on the negotiations this past year because several districts, both the teachers' unions and the management for the school districts, rolled up their sleeves and got their negotiations finished prior to school starting. couple of examples were the Eden Prairie School District and the Bloomington School District, although there were more than those. Everybody in those districts that we have talked to, from staff to management to school board to citizens, have said that was one of the most positive things that could happen. The stress of the negotiations was finished, people put it behind them, and everybody focused on doing a good job when school started and got things off to a very, very positive start, and there was just good feeling throughout those school districts. We think this before and after strategy that Representative Demmer is proposing makes good sense. There is an incentive to get done early if you possibly can, because you're going to have to wait quite a long time to get done otherwise. And it also removes the stress of doing it during the school year. So MASA would speak in favor of this bill. Thank you. I'd answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Kite. If you could stick around, we'll take questions after all testifiers. Could I have a representative come to the table from MSBA, please? Maybe MSBA does not wish it. Oh, okay. Wonderful. Good morning, Mr. Dean. If you'd please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tom Deans, and I'm legal counsel of the School Board Association. First, let me say that the School Board Association strongly supports Section 2 of this bill that repeals the January 15 deadline. We've been in front of this committee on this issue for a long time, and I'm not going to continue to beat that horse. I think you know what the policy issues are. This is really a penalty on the kids, and it repealing that levels the playing field, we believe. We think that Representative Demmer's heart is in the right place on this issue in this bill. No, but we don't think that the solution that you have in this bill actually will work in the real world. To say that you've done your negotiations now for between March and September about, and now we're just going to shut it down and we're going to quit and we're going to go on with school, and that there's going to be labor peace during that time period, I think just doesn't reflect reality. It might not be a bad thing, but it doesn't reflect reality. And what it does is, if the people want to continue to talk to each other, it says you can't, and in fact it would make that behavior criminal. Because if you violate a statutory prohibition that doesn't have a penalty, it's a misdemeanor. And then you can get people that can come in and raise problems, whether they're from the outside or not, saying these people are negotiating with each other. City attorney, please indict them. And we don't think that makes any sense. The aid withholding piece that you have, where if you haven't settled, you can get all your basic aid or basic revenue increase withheld till the next year. The problem that creates is for us is if we haven't already done aid borrowing before September 1st, then since that money would not be paid in that fiscal year, you couldn't do aid borrowing, and you really wouldn't have that money during the year. You would have budgeted for it, and you'd have to be making your cuts during the year, even though you would get the money the next year. And that just, I think maybe that's a procedural glitch, but it doesn't work. The getting the extra $25 is doing it as an incentive is an interesting thing. I'm afraid that we will get pasted sort of the same way that we do now, but for the intransigence of that school board, we would have had $25 more because they didn't collapse and take our position at the table. That's sort of the way that gets played out. But, you know, that's certainly better than taking money away. We will do that. Mr. Chairman, we think the better approach to this, and the answer to this, is the one that we've brought forth and had before this committee for the past several sessions, which is the provision that says if you have not settled by September 1, you are required to submit the contract to binding arbitration. We have supported that. The provisions of Senate File 740 basically are our position. It says if it isn't done, you submit the your issues to the mediator, and it goes to binding arbitration. And that's the end of it, and there is no more negotiations during the school year. We would support that bill. And we think that that solves the problem. We don't believe that this bill solves the problem, even though we know that the author is in good faith trying to solve it.
Thank you, Mr. Deans. Mr. Deans, we do have a question, but we'll come back to questions after all testimony is done, so if you could stick around.
Sure.
If I could have Ms. Jan Allswiber from Education Minnesota come forward, please. Good morning, Ms. Allswiger.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota. And we'd like to thank Representative Demmer for some improvements in this bill. And we would also think that he has the right intentions, but we are concerned about some of the impact of this bill. So, first of all, we'd like to thank him for getting away from the consequences and trying to provide an incentive. That was something that was discussed quite thoroughly in the committee last year, and we appreciate that he's looking at an incentive. There are some other issues with the bill, though, that I would like to go through. But let me give you, as the page is passing these out, let me give you a little bit of background, because as this discussion evolves today, this is very loud.
Yeah, it's fine from my vantage point.
As we have this discussion, you'll hear different ideas, and so I want to give you some historical background about what's been happening with the January 15th in a more updated fashion since we have recently completed negotiations again. But in the January 15th deadline that was just put in place, we only again now had 11 unsettled districts, only 2.9%. I think the facts are pretty compelling that when you don't have a January 15th contract settlement deadline, or some sort of deadline, and we will give Representative Demmer credit for that, that bargaining does take place throughout the year, and our teachers go without a contract for a year and a half. We don't want that either. So January 15th has worked. Last year at this time, there were 250 school districts that were unsettled out of the 341 approximately school districts. If you take a look at the salary schedule increases, this is a document I have not had for you in the past, but you have asked for this information. It is very clear that there really isn't a significant increase, or significant difference, I should say, in the amount of salary increase with a deadline or without a deadline. And then the last document that shows teacher strikes. If you correlate the deadlines with the January 15th deadline, and there's always a lag as things, people's attitudes change and they realize what they're dealing with in the system, it's very clear that the January 15th contract settlement deadline has also stopped strikes. We've only had, I believe, 3 strikes in the last 12 years. I think things are working very, very well. We have 341 school districts, only 3 strikes. We should be applauding the school boards, the administrators, the teachers' unions for working hard to get this job done, especially in the times of little money. So let's go back to the bill then. If I look at the delete all amendment, I'll go through the bill by section. If you look at line, page 1, line 7, there is a problem here with the prohibiting the bargaining once school starts. First of all, on line 7, this would mean that the contract year starts when the teachers first show up. That's the first workshop day in service day, or whatever they have in their contract. That means that they actually wouldn't even have a time to vote on a contract unless they came in before they were scheduled to start working. So unless there's another intent here, I think that in itself is problematic logistically. Line 10, the meet and confer, I think that that's a good addition because we should be able to have the meet and confer. And I was also concerned about the governor's proposal to have professional compensation in available to teachers in the district. We think that that's great, that that opportunity is out there. But we really wonder how this bill would impact it. But we think that it would be very problematic to continue that work and still follow the definition of this law, unless you read line 11 to say that you have a memo of understanding. And then if you say that you could do QCOMP under this memo of understanding or alternative teacher professional pay system under this, language on line 11, then you could bargain anything. So then really that it's meaningless. I mean, if you can bargain QCOMP or alternative teacher professional pay system under this line 11, you can bargain anything so that it is meaningless. So we suggest that you do not even have this prohibition during the school year. On line 13, 90 days is a possibility. We would suggest 120 days and then keep the incentive that he has in line 15 through 17. If you go down to line 23, this is a huge concern because 126C.10 is a formula increase. So there really is a consequence here. If a formula increase was scheduled, and I know that there's been some years when we haven't been receiving any education funding on the formula, but we hope that that won't be the case in the future. But that indeed is a penalty. And so while we would get the $25 incentive if we started, if we settled before the first day of the contract, this is a huge penalty and probably a more significant penalty. On page 2, lines 3 and 4, you know, unless you decide to, I'll give you some general comments, I think, instead of just specific on those two lines. But just for an example, if you are in the midst of contract negotiations with the teachers' union and the school board and things are going really good, really well, do you really want to say by state law that, no, you have to stop? What if they want to continue their work? We think this should be a local decision. And lines two, page 2, line 5 through 7, there's absolutely no way we can support that. And I think Mr. Dean said it quite well that, you know, some of this just does not reflect the reality. So while we appreciate what Representative Jemmer is doing, we think that prohibiting the bargaining during the school year actually will increase some of the, fester some of the problems because they would be prohibited from talking about it. It would give them more time to strategize. Let's face it, the school board is still going to talk about negotiations. The teachers' union is still going to talk about negotiations, especially when the time frame is so constricted. So we ask you not to support this bill, but we would offer to Representative Demmer a possibility of having an incentive of, if you can settle your contract within 120 days of the conclusion of the legislative session, but do not take away the formula, and certainly please do not delay the increase or the teacher salaries that they would have to not receive for a full year. This is a salary deferment, and we cannot support that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Allswager. Your testimony went really good. I mean, well, the cut
time. You had that, right?
And I appreciate the brevity. Representative Demmer, staff has pointed out that on line 7, before the first contact, just to maintain consistency in the bill, that we insert the word student. Would you like to incorporate that amendment to your amendment, Representative Demmer?
Yes,
if they would.
So incorporated. Ms. Allsweiger, as with the other testifiers, if you would remain in case there are questions. We have one person who has asked to testify, one last person, Mr. Tom Sand. So if one of the finest assistant football coaches in the state of Minnesota would like to come forward.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Sand. If you would please state your name for the record and provide the committee with your testimony.
My name is Tom Sand, and as you can probably tell, I'm fairly familiar with the chairman. I live in Jordan, in his hometown, and I had an opportunity to teach the young man.
And you taught me well, thank you, my friend.
And oh yes, and he's what makes me proud. Well, he what makes me proud though. He's totally different, and as he can tell you on political things, but it makes me proud that I had the opportunity to teach somebody that takes on a difficult task like this. So, I applaud you. I'm just here, and I'm just going to be real quick because I just retired. And from teaching, and I negotiated my first time in 1974. So I'm living history here. I've been through this whole thing. And my last negotiation was 2004. And I probably represent most of the school districts. Now, I don't know all the school districts, but I represent them because two-thirds of the school districts in this state are 100 teachers or less. And that's what I know. And, you know, I saw the new things you put on there, and it makes it better. I agree. But I also oppose the fact to restrict it because there's a couple of things that really haven't been talked about. Talking about school districts my size, we have a familiarity with the school board. We have a familiarity with the superintendents. We usually live in the same town. We know each other. And I will tell you from doing this negotiations for 27 years, the part that really happens a lot to get things done is called sidebar. And any time you put restrictions on what you do, you can't have this kind of conversation. And I think that's why there's got to be, as we know, because I can tell you from negotiations in Jordan, the fact that there was a January 15th deadline, that got it done. They were scrambling at the end to get it done. So I totally agree with that. There has to be some kind of, but I obviously like the January 15th. But I think that's one of the biggest things. If you take away the flexibility, to not of the formal negotiations, is so much of that gets done in just other discussions when then you get back together and take care of it. The other thing that really happens in negotiations, never ever talked about, at least in districts my size, I believe, those nagging issues that they may not even have to do with salary, but those nagging issues that are not taken care of, they come up before negotiations, and you talk about them. But there's a lot of different things other than what you bring in as far as your various size. And I think, again, if you restrict that, you take away that kind of opportunity. And I think that causes more problems than not. And so I'm a believer that you should have the flexibility to do that. Again, I'm just looking at what I know. School's my size. But if it's two-thirds of what are in the state, I think it's fairly representative of what goes on. And you try to maintain, believe me, from going through a strike, leading a strike, is the most painful thing that you can possibly do. And Mark had just graduated, I believe, when we went. So he's aware of that. And but what happens usually, there are other issues that cause it. There's probably some masculine, but usually there's some anger about something. And if you can't have time to kind of deal with that in a non-restricted kind of situation, then I think that festers. And they talk about the festering and have to wait. So, I see where it's going here, and I see there's some positives coming out of this from the original, and I'm for that. But to put that restriction in reality, I'm talking actual reality, living reality, at least in the districts my size, which are most of them, I think when you put those restrictions on there, it causes those things to fester and become bigger problems. They may have nothing to do with what the salary schedule is or what the health package is. Probably has something to do with them usually. There are other things that I think if you restrict that becomes an issue. So, Mark and I have had many discussions over the years, and we are totally polar opposites in how we believe on this. But I think I do appreciate the opportunity to come here and speak before I can. I had all this kind of stuff written down, but I see most of it was colored. But I can just tell you, and there always seems to be this worry, I guess my last point here, this worry about striking and teachers and us. You're in the business because your heart's this big to begin with. Really, otherwise you wouldn't do it. It's too hard. You don't make enough money. And there's just, people are taking pot shots at you all the time. They just are. But that's the nature of the beast. So to put yourself in the most terrible position to do that, it is very difficult, and the statistics bear out, it rarely happens. So that's just kind of my 2 cents worth from somebody that's just got done doing it, and so that's that.
Thank you for your testimony, Coach. At this time, let's see, there is another amendment to this bill in our packet, and I don't know if this amendment is going to be offered. I don't believe it's going to be offered at this time. Okay, so at this time we'll ask if there are any, well, first Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments. 11 years on the school board is what I served. I went through a few different negotiations as a negotiator, in addition to being on the board with others negotiating. I can appreciate appreciate Mr. Sands' viewpoint on this. The one thing I would point out is this doesn't restrict anything. Keep in mind, I do have some statistics too. Last year, when we didn't get done the legislature until late July, we still had, 19 school districts settled before school started. So the idea that we need, 3 months or 4 months after the time the bill is settled has been borne out to be not really true. We can get this thing done. Mr. Chair, there was talking about, and Ms. Allswager talked about, we need a deadline, and I agree 100%, and that's what this bill is all about. It's about a deadline. All we're talking about is moving the deadline. I think that when you boil down a lot of the conversation, whether it's Mr. Sands, Ms. Allswager, even Mr. Deans, we're trying to come up with lots of excuses and lots of reasons why we can't do this in the summertime. And I'm sorry, but summertime for a lot of people is work time just as much as the wintertime is, probably for a vast majority of the people in the state. The only difference is in the summertime it's a little nicer out, you wear short-sleeved shirts instead of coats and jackets. And I think we have an assumption here that there would be a short period of time to negotiate, and we're restricting things because when the fall comes, we don't have much time to get negotiation done. Keep in mind, members, summertime can be negotiated also. We can start in March of a year, and we can negotiate all summer long when there's not the pressures of the school day, not the pressures of activities of the kids. So we're still looking at a 5 to 6 month time frame here to get these negotiations done. So it's not about restricting the time and not taking the time for thoughtfully going through these things. And the other thing I would, well, I'll just leave it at that. The other thing I was going to say is the contract does expire June 30th. So even in September, we're talking about 2 months or past the deadline of this contract when it expires. I guess in my world and in the business world, when contracts are done, you like to have the new contract in place to go forward. And we've got a culture in schools and education that says that the contract ends, but it doesn't really mean anything because we'll negotiate through the next year. And I would submit that maybe we need to look at that culture and say, when the contract's over, you've got a nice to have a new contract getting in place as soon as possible. So that's what this is about. So, taking all the rhetoric, just keep in mind, are we trying to come up with excuses why it's okay to be doing this stuff during the school year when we've got all this stuff going on with the kids? Or are we really looking at things that that make it so we shouldn't be doing this? I think it all boils down to coming up with excuses as to why we can stay in the culture that we have and doing this when it's convenient for the adults, regardless of what it does for the kids. And I think when we look at that, Mr. Chair, that's what it boils down to.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. And we have about 2 minutes for questioning as we move forward with this bill. Representative Windsor.
Matter of time, Chair. I'm not going to ask my question.
Right. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, Representative.
Could you remind us what the current format of the bill is in terms of all these amendments?
Representative, we have one amendment. It is the A061152, the Read Everything Amendment, and there has been one amendment incorporated to the amendment, and that's on line 7 of page 1, before the first contact, insert the word student. Members, with that, Representative Griley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You'd ask for questions, and yes. So I didn't have one, but I just wanted to make a comment. You know, I really think we missed the boat here on coming to a consensus where we could have met both of our goals. One of them is to keep the penalty of January 15th for districts that drag along, because that just really does drag everything down. But we have the opportunity, I thought, the last, you know, way back when we had this comprehensive hearing last year, to also incent districts to finish up by the before school starts. And I think the makings of that are right here. You know, if we did the first half of the Abler Amendment and, you know, stuck with that, we could have accomplished both of those goals. And so it doesn't sound like we're going to consider doing that, I would just like to say I am a strong supporter of finishing contracts before school starts, and I do think there needs to be a penalty eventually. If, you know, as I said, I supported that before the teachers' unions did. I think we could do both, and this is not giving us that opportunity. But I'd encourage you, even at this late moment, to consider doing the first half of the Abler Amendment, not the second half, and keeping the penalty.
Right. Representative Thorne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know this is going to finance, so I'll just save it as a comment. But as I look at the bill, it does seem to me that it fundamentally is, as Representative Demmer said, moving the deadline to a much earlier time. It seems to me that I think it increases the penalty by the withholding of the revenue. But I'm also wrestling with when is a penalty an incentive or vice versa. I'm struggling with that $25, because I think you could characterize our current system as saying, well, we'll build the incentive in up front, and then if you really don't perform by January 15th, well, then we'll take away the incentive, and I'm not sure how we would budget in reverse. Somehow or other, $25 is on the table, and I guess in finance we'd have to discuss just how that, you know, where that money comes from, and whether we withhold what they would have gotten and then call it an incentive when they get it, or whatever. But I think that would still be an issue in my mind, just when is an incentive a penalty or vice versa, when we've only got so much money and it's going to come one way or the other. And so, you know, I look forward to the future discussion of, you know, of this in finance, as we, you know, maybe I'm the only one, although I know that Mr. Deans did comment that he thought probably bottom line they'd get whacked on the head either way or something, you know, was the line that he used. So,
Representative?
Mr. Chair, very quickly, I want to make sure we're very clear on the what the bill says about revenue. We're not withholding revenue from the schools. This bill does not say that. Hmm. What it says is that any increase in their general fund formula that they would have received, the increase is delayed. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, in my world, a delay of something you're going to get eventually is not the same as losing it altogether, so I can't agree with those who say that a delay in an increase is worse than taking money away from schools. That characterization was made, I think, by Ms. Halswiger, and I simply can't agree with that sort of thinking. But again, this does not say we're taking revenue, withholding all revenue from schools, Representative Dorn. It's just the difference that they would get if there was an increase in the formula.
Thank you. I meant to say if I didn't.
All right, members, seeing no further questions, Representative Demmer moves that, renews his motion that House File 1273, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All those in favor signify by saying.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Demmer.
Roll call vote.
Representative Demmer represents a roll call vote. Ms. Carter will take the roll.
Fiskin.
Yes.
Erickson.
Yes.
Abler.
No.
Carlson.
No.
Sharon. Seibert.
Yes.
Dabney.
No.
Dean.
Yes.
Demmer.
Yes.
Beecher.
Yes.
Dorn.
No.
Eastland.
Yes.
Deacon.
No.
Greiling.
No.
Heidkirchen.
No.
Clemson.
Yes.
Lanning.
Yes.
Latch.
No.
Mariani. Markler.
No.
Nornis.
Yes.
Olson.
Yes.
Klauski.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Rude.
No.
Saylor.
No.
Severson.
Yes.
Sikora.
Yes.
Wardlow.
No.
Ms. Carter, would you call the absent members one more time?
Sharon. And Mariani.
There being 13 ayes and 14 nays, the motion does not prevail. Members, we will go on to the... Thank you, Representative Denman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, we will now go on to the second bill on the agenda, House File 3063, and I will turn the gavel over to the Vice Chair, Representative Erickson.
Welcome to the testifying table, Representative Biskins. As soon as you're ready, please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move that House File 3063 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Biskins. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and members. House File 3063. Affectionately termed the Teacher Layoff Protection Act, deals with a portion of law which was passed by a tripartisan government back in 2001. It was passed through Republican Majority House of Representatives, a DFL Majority Senate, and signed into law by an independent governor at the time. So it was a piece of legislation in which all of the bodies came together with a lot of compromise, I might add, and in exactly the way an old social studies teacher once taught me, good laws get done, all right? And basically, this in law, we have the structure of balance report, which simply says that before a contract is signed into law, a school board needs to do their analysis and show that they have the money to pay for it. One of the compromises that came forward in doing so was in how the board showed that they have the money, and the original bill prevented school boards from laying off any employees, etc., in doing so. The current law says no, that is fair to be able to do that. That's what's in current law, and that's what's worked very effectively for 90 to 95% of the school districts in the state of Minnesota. However, there are some school districts, and you will hear a report in just a bit, that simply refuse to follow the law. There is no teeth in the law as it currently sits, and we have some school districts that just say, it's a silly report, I ain't going to do it. I don't believe that it is the prerogative of a school board to ignore the will of the legislature and the governor's office. And so what this bill, a lot of cleanup language on the bill, clarifying language, but the most significant part of this bill is simply follow the law as most school districts do, and if you don't, there's going to be a penalty to not following the law. And that is a penalty that seems to be widely supported by most, and that would be a $25 per pupil penalty. And I don't believe that this is going to create a hardship for any school district, because I honestly believe in my heart and soul that every school board, prior to signing a contract, has costed it out. Okay? Simply make those numbers public. That's what the law says you should do, and that's what most school districts do, and for those who don't do it, who simply snub their nose at the legislature, there'll be a price to pay for doing that. So, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, thank you very much for the ability to present this bill, and I believe that Mr. Jim Bartholomew would like to testify to it.
Thank you, Chairman Viskins, and we would like to call Jim Bartholomew to the testifying table. Welcome, Mr. Bartholomew. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew. I'm with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of this bill. As Representative Biskins has said, this is a bill that at its core is designed to help avoid teacher layoffs. It does this by simply asking school boards to cost out their settlements to make sure they have available revenues to pay for it. And again, as Mr. Biskins said, it really is a public information methodology for school boards as well, for the public to get a better sense of the financial decisions that are going on in the district. One of the main reasons the business partnership has supported this bill back in the days of Governor Ventura and before is the core of what goes on in our schools is teaching, the interaction between students and teachers. And the idea that we need to try to prevent the avoidable loss of teachers is core to our success. And there's some couple statistics that make this as important today as it was 5 years ago. There have been reports that about 40% of new teachers leave the profession in the first 5 years of being teachers. We have a huge loss of our best and brightest entering the profession. We're also at a time today, as we were 5 years ago, where we're expecting significant losses of teachers due to retirement. So at the same time we're losing a large part of our teacher workforce due to retirements, we also have a very difficult time keeping our best and brightest as they enter into the profession. There's a clear challenge there, and if there's a way to avoid unnecessary teacher layoffs, I think that's in everyone's best interest. And just as a side, as everyone knows, as you lose teachers, the general impact of that is you have higher class sizes and you lose program offerings. Two things that everybody wants to avoid. I won't be long on why does this bill make a difference? Why is it necessary? And Representative Biskins mentioned a couple of the reasons, and if I could just pass these out, going through the department's website to see how districts have reported the structural balance, not just this year, but through the years. Since this bill was passed, we've monitored and used the reports where we can, because for those districts that do follow the law, it does provide a very useful glimpse into some of the decision-making that's going on at the district level. And as you get these reports, these are just two examples, and there are others, but the first one you'll see is a report by a district, pardon me, it's this one. They filed a report in 2001, but if you go to the report itself, it's blank. There's nothing there. So I haven't had a chance to talk to the department to see why they registered the district as filing a report, but technically they did once, 5 years ago. But when they actually went to put down the information, it's blank all the way through. The second example that's being passed out is again by a district that filed one report in 2002, none subsequent. And I kind of got to some of the points that Representative Biskins was getting to. If you look at the report numbers itself, and maybe I'll hold it up, but
there's a revenue line. This is where, this is the guts of the report. Show the revenues of the school district, show the impact of the settlement, as well as other costs facing the district. And the idea is to try and keep those two in line. And then the bottom line is the fund balance that the district expects to have. Now, as you can see, the revenues are projected to slightly decline, relatively flat, but slightly decline. The cost side, or the expenditure side, the settlement goes up somewhat, not a lot, but it goes up, and then costs are also going up. And the net effect, as you can see on the fund balance, is the district goes from an $8.3 million surplus to the end to almost a $4 million deficit. And so clearly you can see that the expenditures are exceeding the revenues. And later on in the report, you'll find that the district is not, all the district reports is that a specified amount of revenues will have to be cut to balance out revenues and expenditures. It doesn't give the public any information on what strategies the board anticipates using to balance their budget. And again, this is in contrast to some districts in their reports that provide very helpful, detailed information about how they did the calculations, what the calculations mean, and how they're going to respond if they need to. So, again, we think this, the structural balance is a wonderful tool for school boards, school districts, employee unions to map out their financial planning. And it's also a wonderful tool for the public to be able to get a glimpse about what's going on with the district's financial planning and decision making. And we would ask that if you could, to please support this bill. We think that the law itself is very helpful, and this would be a good bill for just tightening it up a bit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Don't go far because there may be questions of you later. And then Jan Alsweiger, representing Education Minnesota. Welcome to the testifying table. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Jan Alsweiger, Education Minnesota. I think this bill does far more than originally we heard. And I refer him to 41 states approximately, as I stated earlier. And I've just heard here a couple of examples of where it wasn't working. I think the department should talk to the departments and tell them to fill out the reports. Why do we need a bill to actually put further requirements on those districts that are following the law? I give a blank form, talk to the district. And I just really am having trouble finding what we're fixing in this bill that is a problem. School districts are currently costing out packages. I can tell you teachers are focused on teaching. The teachers in the classrooms are not the ones that are filling out this report. But I want to give you an overall picture first. So what happens if we have the structural balance? And why would you want to make it even more significant? And I'll tell you how it becomes more significant later. But first of all, fund balances. What would happen to fund balances since we have the structural balance law? First of all, there isn't a problem to fix. Consider this. The number of students in the state has gone down, declined. There has been a slight reduction of teachers. And yet, fund balances have increased 25% since the inception of this law. So why are we going to make it even more stringent? Let me go through some of the bill now. On page 1, line 14, start beginning around line 14, 15, excuse me, it says that the board must not use one-time revenue for ongoing expenses. So that, what that means is that you can't use your fund balance in determining how you're going to cost out some of your packages. In other words, you can't use anything that you have been saving for possibly a negotiation cycle. we don't think that it's right that you would have to not be able to use those fund balances. On line 16, it says any amount in excess of the board's resolution for the district's general fund balance is not one-time revenue under the section. What does that mean? That means, as we interpret it, the school board could pass a resolution to say, we are going to say that this money is, amount of money is set aside and cannot be available for bargaining. What is that like? What does that mean if I give you an analogy? That would be like if the governor in the state of rest told you, the legislature, the House and the Senate, let's just pretend we had a $200 million surplus. If he said, we are going to set aside $150 million that the House and the Senate cannot even touch. You don't have any say about it. The only thing that you can propose are expenditures in $50 million. Because I'm sending $550. This is exactly what that statement says. I don't think any of you here would think that that was acceptable. Because you would have no recourse. You would have no opportunity for discussion. This is clear that when the board makes that resolution, it's done. You wouldn't stand for that for the governor. I don't think that you should allow that at the local level. That's either. On line 1, in page 1, on line 23, and going on to 24, when you change it from 1 year to 2 years, now you are using 2004 law, and you are having to project out an additional year. That makes it even more complicated and difficult to have an accurate projection. We do not support that. And we just thought it was a little ironic on page 2, line 29, that it's proposed to remove the $25 per pupil penalty, but that is included. So we strongly oppose this bill. This is a bill that is not needed, not necessary. If somebody's not filling out the report, give them a call, tell them to fill out the paperwork, and don't let the governor or in the situation like this where the governor would have control. The school board should now have the ultimate control with no dialogue about the revenue and not simply fund balances. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Ms. Alsweiger, for your testimony. Would the Minnesota School Board Association like to testify this morning? Welcome to the testifying table. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. It's a pleasure to be with you here this morning. My name is Grace Schwab, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, and we are in support of the Chairman's bill. This originally was a concept brought to the legislature by MSBA, looking for ways to provide clarity to the public on our financial issues. Unfortunately, as it moved through the process, it was weakened considerably from the original bill, and we'd like to thank Representative Fiskin for giving us a stronger tool on which to do negotiations and show our public where their taxpayer dollars are being spent in schools.
Thank you, Ms. Schwab. And back to you, Representative Fiskin, for some more comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, just to comment on some of the issues brought up, there is a concern about the sentence that begins on line page 1, line 15, moving into line 16. I think any discernible reader would look and see that that is not a change at all. Right, you're simply cleaning up language that already exists in law. The board must not use one-time revenue for ongoing expenditures. Ms. Alsweiger presented that as a change in law, but if you look at the words that are being stricken and the words that are being inserted, it's the same meaning. Right? So there is no change. There is no added hardships. Ms. Alsweiger herself said this is being done, and it's a good thing. right. And then I want to go to the sentence that begins on page 1, line 16, and goes on to line 17 on page 1. Any amount in excess of the board's resolution for district's general fund balance is not one-time revenue on this, under this section. I can't fathom why the teachers' union would have an objection to that statement. Basically, it says if the board is going to make a resolution and they lowballed the resolution and there's actually more money there, they can use it in negotiations because it's not considered one-time revenue. It's considered ongoing revenue, so you can now use it for negotiations. So I think there was a misinterpretation of that sentence and the intent of that sentence. The 2 years that were pointed out on page 1, line 24, seems to make sense to me that the legislature passes a biennial budget and when a contract is costed out, that a school board and in conjunction with the teachers union is going to cost out the contract over the life of the budget. It just seems logical to me. The only real significant change in this bill is the $25 penalty. Now, Ms. Allswiger says we should just call up the schools who aren't doing the report and tell them to do the report. And I suppose in her world, we'd call up bank robbers and tell them to stop robbing banks. All right? There doesn't have to be any punishment to breaking the law. All right? Just tell them not to break the law and they won't break the law. All right, well, I'd love to live in utopia too, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I renew my motion and will answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Representative Biskins. Representative Pawlowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Biskins, just a couple of procedural questions. Can you tell me if there's going to be a K-12 supplemental finance bill?
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pawlowski, that would be a question to ask Representative Sikora.
Well, I have another question then.
Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, is there a Senate companion to this bill?
Representative Biskins.
Madam Chair, Representative Pawlowski, yes, there is.
There is. Can you tell
Representative Pawlowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Biskins. Can you tell me what the status is of the bill in the Senate?
Madam Chair, Representative Pawlowski, I believe it was introduced yesterday or the last prior Senate floor meeting, and so I'm assuming it's been referred to their Education Policy Committee.
Madam Chair, yes, Representative Biskins, if there is no K-12 supplemental finance bill, would you anticipate this bill moving all by itself?
Representative Biskins.
Madam Chair, Representative Pawlowski, yes, I do, and that is why the motion is to refer to the General Register.
All right. Madam Chair,
yes,
Representative Biskins, my concern is that since last Thursday, we passed out one bill on a 15-14 vote without recommendation to pass, which I would call a tepid support at best. We just defeated one bill on another vote of 15-14. And now we have your bill, which may or may not go into a supplemental bill, but certainly if it goes to the floor, it may have questionable support. I'm just wondering, it seems we're dealing with marginal pieces of legislation that have marginal support in the legislature, and I'm not too sure if they have any support in the general public. That's just a general comment.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I was just asking Ms. Larson a question. But I'm told that maybe the best person to ask is Mr. Melcher, if it would be all right for him to come forward. And thank you. The question is, I know this is a little different type of penalty provision, but what comes to my mind, Mr. Melcher, all the way to Mr. Melcher.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Melcher. Please state your name for the record and be ready to answer these questions.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. Tom Melcher, Finance Director at the Department of Education.
Representative Carlson.
Melcher, there was some discussion that you probably heard about phone calls back and forth. The district doesn't comply with the department. And my recollection is that there is a general statute that the department can use if a school district is out of compliance in some way. And my question is, would that not apply where someone sends in a blank paper or someone doesn't send anything in at all if you wanted to have them meet whatever law that they're not in compliance with.
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, there is a statute that provides some enforcement mechanism, but it's very limited to things like school districts that have hired non-licensed teachers. I believe there was a couple of years ago a department proposal to broaden that authority to have some sort of penalty or withholding of aid if there were other kinds of provisions that school districts did not comply with, and that was not successful in passing the legislature. So in a situation like this, the department would not have any enforcement power. We could call a school district and say, it looks like you didn't complete this form, could you please do that? But there wouldn't be any sort of recourse for the department if the district opted not to.
Madam Chair, I'll accept Mr. Melchert's comment. It's his bailiwick, if you will.
Representative Markworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe Mr. Melcher can answer this from the department, but I don't see it in the bill, but if someone did not turn in the form, is there a letter that would go out stating you haven't turned your form in? My concern is you might get a new superintendent, whatever, and all of a sudden they get this note from the department that they're going to lose $25 a year. Is there, what type of process would be used in that case?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair, Representative Markwart, under the current statute, the department's role in this is simply to create a model form and to collect the information the school districts report and make it available on the department's website to the public. And in the first couple of years of the reporting under this, the department did publish some summary statistics. We have not taken an aggressive position in terms of following up with school districts that have not filled out the report. We could certainly do that administratively, but up to this point in time, we have not gone to great lengths to do checking of who has and hasn't submitted the report or done a lot of detail editing. If there was $25 per student on the line, then certainly the department would need to be spending more time in terms of editing and reviewing the reports that came in.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Markworth.
So I guess, right, with a $25 penalty now, it's a little different than what it was before. So would there be, from the department, some sort of a notice that would go out? I know if cities are late in sending in their budget reports, the state auditor will send a note to them stating you have to do this or you start losing some local government aid. I mean, would that be the plan of the department to send a letter of notice out of noncompliance before the penalty takes effect?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Markwart, as I read the bill language, page 2, lines 24 and 25, would direct the commissioner to not accept any reports that do not comply with the section. So under that would be new language that would expand the department's role here. So we would be required under this bill to review each of the reports that came in and evaluate whether they were or were not complying, and we would provide a notice then to the districts before we reduce the aid. And the aid penalty here does not provide a time frame, so that the department would need to administratively make some judgment as to kind of what length of time we would wait before we took the money away. Presumably we would make every effort to get the report from those districts that hadn't submitted a report, or to work with the district to get the report cleaned up before we went to the point of actually taking dollars away.
Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Just a question of clarification on line 15 and 16. As I understand that those one-time monies, which would be the fund balances, can't be used for ongoing expenditures. Can you clarify how that affects that 70% for the classroom that we passed already through this committee?
Representative Diskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I don't believe it have any effect. The fund balances can, which is indeed considered one-time money, can go to one-time expenditures within the classroom. I could see that as being curricular material, supplemental material, technology, et cetera, which are all acceptable classroom uses.
Madam Chair. Representative, you know, much of the, when we're talking about those dollars, much of those are teacher salaries. I mean, we're a human resources business, so let's say the fund balance is a huge fund balance, and teacher salaries need to be paid, so I'm trying to put in my own mind how we can reconcile that fund balance with teacher salaries and that 70%.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I know you and I have had extensive discussions on this bill, but that was long before you became a representative. All right? Yes, I think you were representing a different constituency at that time. However, we haven't had, you know, the discussion and the reconciliation with the 70% to the classroom, and I understand that. I do not believe that this bill can conflicts at all with the 70% to the classroom issue. Again, as Representative Quinson pointed out during the discussion on that piece of legislation, you know, while the bulk of your money to the classroom is indeed the educators, right, there are still one-time expenditures that go into the classroom, and fund balances is one-time money, which would be appropriate for one-time expenditures. So this bill doesn't affect that at all.
Representative Dorn has the last question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think maybe Mr. Melcher would be the one to answer it, but he has left the room. I was just wondering if we have a list of the districts that did not submit a report. Do you have, maybe Representative Biskins could at least answer. Have you seen a list of the districts that did not submit a report?
Representative Biskin.
Madam Chair, Representative Dorn, I'm going to nod my head because it was not my intention to embarrass any specific school district or have their names brought forward. It wasn't that intention at all, but yes, a list has been compiled.
Okay, and secondly,
yes,
Representative Dorn. Chair, I see Mr. Melcher came back in, and maybe he could answer. He said if a district didn't respond or whatever, have we had an instance where a district was contacted, told they did not submit the report, and then still refused to submit the report, or failed, I guess would be the kinder word. I'm trying to get at whether or not this is more a matter of just simply communication about forms and reports that are needed and followed up on versus something more than that, because the penalty is certainly a very serious penalty for what I, you know, whatever would be going on. But maybe Mr. Melcher can answer that question.
Dr. Melcher, would you reintroduce yourself for the sake of the tape?
Madam
and then
Chair
answer.
And members, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. Just recently been assigned the area that would include the structural balance report, so I'm not familiar with the early history in detail. I know the department was more active in working with districts in the first couple of years as this was set up, and I know there have been cases where the department has contacted districts where there have been problems, and those problems have been resolved. I'm not aware of any occasions where the department asked to have something cleaned up and it wasn't, but I don't know for sure.
Okay. Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Biskin, some closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I'd appreciate your support.
Representative Biskin renews his motion that 3063 pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye, please.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
3063 is passed and will proceed to the House floor. Thank you very much, Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Okay, where are we at?
Members, final bill on the agenda for today is House File 2680, providing a teacher training program for qualified professionals. As before, members, we have heard this piece of legislation and, in fact, last year passed it out of this committee on a voice vote. Representative Erickson, if you would please move your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Within this committee, I'd like to move House File 2680, recommend it pass, and be placed on the general register.
Representative Erickson moves that House File 2680 be recommended pass and be referred to the general register. Representative Erickson, to your bill.
Thank you, Representative Biskins in committee. This alternative pathway to teacher licensure is really a way to strengthen quality among our teachers. As we know so well, every day there are experts, especially in the fields of math and science, who retire from our classrooms. So here is a true alternative that would allow mid-career professionals to move into those places doing two things: bringing with them expertise in the areas of shortage in the state of Minnesota as far as licensure, and secondly, probably improving retention, because what we have seen over the years is that our young graduates, those who are under 30, who have not yet been in a career, come into the field and after maybe 2 to 3 years leave the profession. So we want to work on two things, committee and Representative Biskins, in this bill, and that's find a way to get mid-career professionals who are willing to leave their profession or have left it to take a look at entering the profession of teaching. This will make students first and teachers first perfect in the state of Minnesota. I don't think it's necessary for me to walk through the bill again. I have done that at least twice before. But today we have 47 states plus the District of Columbia that have alternative routes to licensure. Over 250,000 have been licensed through these programs, and I'm proud to say that last year, according to the Washington Times, 35,000 persons received licensure through an alternative pathway, and some of them were retired military or military personnel who had returned to the United States or had left that service and entered our field of education. As you know, our areas of shortage in this bill are math, science, teaching English as a second language, special education, and the one that I'm missing is world languages. And Mr. Chair, before I go any further, I probably should add the amendment A1. I'm sorry about that. I got a little excited here, and that's my repealer of the present alternative. So I would like to move the A1 amendment, please.
Representative Erickson moves the H2680 A1 amendment as a courtesy to the author to get the bill on the shape she'd like to speak to it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry that I goofed there, and now I will want to renew my motion later as amended. But, committee, I want you to think about the future of education in Minnesota and that we want to have our teachers highly qualified. Moving through this process, although it is an alternative process, is going to keep our teachers highly qualified. Because think of what they have to do to receive that licensure. This is no easy way to become licensed. First of all, you have to be a willing candidate. You have to go out to seek a job with a school district. That school district has to agree to hire you as a provisional licensed teacher. You'll have to get into a program, and God willing, we will have universities that will take on this program. They don't have to, but you know, if they do, they're going to have a program that's been under the scrutiny of an advisory board that consists of principals, superintendents, and teachers, plus persons from our secondary institutions. This is, you know, really important that we take a look at what is going to make up the basis for the coursework that these candidates are going to take during a pre-induction time. It could be summer, it could be some other time. And then the field-based service, which research is saying is so important today, that a teacher be in a classroom for longer than 12 weeks with a full-time mentor. And that's what this program demands, that there is an expert in the field, let's say it's math, working with this provisionally licensed teacher through that school year. Besides, that candidate on weekends is studying pedagogy, studying student management, the other things that go along with the trials and tribulations of a first-year teacher. And here we have a mature candidate who is willing to, you know, spend this kind of extra time, up to 200 hours. Moreover, when that year is over, this teacher is going to be under the scrutiny to get the permanent license of an evaluation by the principal, by teachers, by the mentor, and by anyone else that the school board determines they want to evaluate this candidate. So with that information before you, I'll stand for questions, and I do have Dan Dittman here from the Licensing Division of the Department of Education to answer specific questions.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Mr. Dittman, are you here to testify or answer questions? And I'll do it this way. Mr. Dittman, nod your head if you're here just to answer questions.
I will answer questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dittman. At this time, then, I'm going to ask people who have asked to testify to this bill to come forward, and then we'll ask the questions generally after our testimony. So, Representative Erickson, do you know if it is Mr. Hoffman's intent to testify this morning?
That's up to Mr. Hoffman. He would like to.
Thank you.
On behalf of the Board of Teachers.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. At this time, I'd like to call down Mr. Alan Hoffman from the Board of Teaching. Welcome, Mr. Hoffman.
Good morning.
If you please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
My name is Alan Hoffman. I'm the director of the Minnesota Board of Teaching.
Mm-hmm.
The Minnesota Board of Teaching would like to speak in support of this legislation, which would allow more qualified individuals in identified shortage areas to enter the profession of teaching. Within the purview of the Board of Teaching is the development and oversight of standards for teacher preparation. And we feel confident that the components of this, which Representative Erickson elaborated on previously, so I will not mention, meet the standards as which would allow a qualified teacher to enter the teaching profession. We look forward to working with the teacher prep institutions as well as this advisory group in the development of the criteria for this new area of licensure should this legislation pass.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Could I ask that Mr. Garnett Franklin, I apologize. Representative Greiland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I ask the question of Mr. Hoffman?
Sure, as long as he's here. Mr. Hoffman, if you wouldn't mind staying for just a second.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Tell me, what was the reasoning for the Board of Teaching to support this legislation? I thought, you know, when I visited with the board members a while back and this was being discussed, there was at least a lot of individual strong opposition. And what changed?
There are some people on the board who had some concern, but approximately a year ago, Representative Erickson attended one of our meetings, and as we expressed our concern, many of the components that are now in this proposed legislation address those concerns. For example, the inclusion of teacher prep institutions, the Board of Teaching actually making the approval of the program, as well as the addressing of pedagogy requirements, classroom management prior to entry, as well as the evaluations and the reflection post.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What was the vote, and was it determined at all on change of composition of the Board of Teaching, or did those same people I talked to get satisfied with these changes?
Mr. Hoffman.
I'm not going to be able to remember the actual vote. I'm sorry, but I can't address that.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Brown.
What was it approximately? Was it unanimous? Was it close? Was it?
There were probably 2 to 3 to 4 who had concerns. Maybe 1 or 2 who were actually quite in opposition.
And then, Mr. Chair, final question.
Representative Kylan.
How many people changed on the Board of Teaching in the last couple of years?
Mr. Hoffman.
Out of 11, I would say 8.
Thank
eight
you,
or nine.
Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Hoffman.
You're welcome, Representative Kylan. Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Ms. Franklin, welcome. Please state your name for the record and provide your testimony.
Good morning. I'm Garnet Franklin. I'm an education issue specialist at Education Minnesota. Part of my work responsibility is monitoring issues of teacher preparation and licensing in Minnesota. It's a great job. The state of Minnesota has been known for years, decades in fact, and having a number one teachers. And we're about the business of supporting keeping it that way. But I need to tell you that Education Minnesota is four square against supporting this bill. We have some very specific problems with it. In particular, let me take you back to Ed 101 for just a minute. There's a reason that teacher licensing happens at the state level rather than at a school district level. It was found a long time ago that the folks who employ teachers and who need to find teachers to fill their faculty ranks might have a little bit of a bias in judging whether someone is qualified to teach in a certain employment slot. States took over setting standards for teacher licensure, so there was some sort of continuity across the state. So someone who was credentialed in Walroad would have met the same requirements that someone who was credentialed in Albert Lea. So the Board of Teaching has held that banner and carried it strongly for a number of years. However, we are not against the notion of alternative routes. In Minnesota, under current statutes and rules, alternative programs can and have taken place. There have been programs in at Mankato State, across a region of our state. St. Cloud has done collaborative work with North Branch. St. Thomas has done collaborative work in St. Paul. It's doable, and the Minnesota Board of Teaching is a player in making sure those are of highest quality. There really isn't a need for a new and maybe limiting statute in order to create alternative routes to licensure. We think it's terrific when folks from other professions want to join ours, but we want to make sure they meet the professional standards set for teachers in Minnesota. We believe our students deserve no less. The bill itself restricts the Board of Teaching in what must and maybe what won't be considered in order to create an alternative program. For example, in the bill there is a notion that folks bring in a major. That major may or may not meet the content standards that are set by the Board of Teaching. Those are the little nitpicking things we could do with the bill, but instead this morning, I'd like you to know that we are excited about the energy that Representative Erickson brings to the notion of looking at creative ways to continue the quality of the teaching force in Minnesota. We are here to say that the reports that assert that a quality teacher is the essential factor in a K-12 student's education is wonderful. We believe it to be true, and we're glad there's studies out there to back it up. But we're uneasy about the possibility for small project at the school district level in order to put people in slots that may or may not reach the standards that we need could come from this bill. We are especially interested in working with all who care about quality teacher preparation and licensing and do collaborate with the Board of Teaching, teacher preparation programs, and others in order to create ways to bring people into the profession. One last comment about those who are leaving the profession in their first few years. There's beginning research about why people do so, and it really doesn't have anything to do with the quality in teaching, nor does it have to do with the fact that they don't want to teach. These people tell us time and again that there are systemic reasons for why they've left teaching. It may be for a lack of support in their practice, and it may be for a lack of funding, but it has very little to do with the fact that they want to or don't want to teach. So finally, Education Minnesota believes that under current law and rules, the Board of Teaching can, in fact, enable programs that are alternative routes, and we're happy to work with them to do so. We're puzzled by the need for another bill to create a specific program that is an alternate route. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Franklin. We have one other person who has asked to testify, Mr. Russ Stanton. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Russ Stanton. I represent the inter-faculty organization, which is the faculty at the seven state universities. We're appearing to testify against the bill. I testified last year, so I'll make this very brief. It's basically a repeat of what we said last year. First of all, we don't think the bill is necessary because every one of our state universities currently has programs for preparing mid-career people to quickly enter the field of teaching. There are great efforts already going on in this area. Secondly, we have a statute already on the books for alternative licensure, and if there's something wrong with that statute, I think that could be looked at. But basically, we do have a statute already for doing this. And thirdly, because we view it as a weakening of the standards. This program requires 9 credits of pre-induction and 200 clock hours. A comparable teacher prep program would be about 495 clock hours plus student teaching if you were to try to convert that into clock hours. So we think it's a weakening of the standards. You know, over the last decade, there have been very rigorous efforts of program approval of teacher preparation programs at our universities, and a lot of resources went into upgrading those teacher education programs to assure quality and make sure that the people that come out of those programs know their subject area and know how to teach. And it seems to me like this is backing away from that movement toward more rigorous standards. So for those reasons, we would oppose the bill. We think there are already mechanisms in place and working. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm curious about, sir, Mr. Stanton, is, you know, we're expecting them to pass the Praxis 2 assessment for each subject area that they will teach. They have to have the undergraduate major degree, pass their skills examination. They're going to have a whole year of mentoring, 9 credits, classroom techniques, pedagogy, et cetera. Explain to me how, you know, another teacher has, you know, a more rigorous preparation than this. Would you please?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sikora, I think I just mentioned more clock hours of instruction, and if you were to make a comparison, if you were to take the credits and convert them into clock hours, more clock hours of preparation, I'll agree that, you know, there are some safeguards in this, but in terms of in the bill, in terms of the requirements, and it's much improved from when the bill first started, but it still is not as much preparation as what they would get through a teacher prep program.
Thank you. Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. In my experience, when I was a math teacher, and one of the best subs we ever had was a pilot who came in, because pilots have a strong background in math. We had another parent come in every day, every other day, because it was a real job, but he was a computer science expert, and this guy was probably better than most of the teachers in our building in the way he handled kids. Now, I was against this bill last year for the reasons you've expounded, but I'm looking at the shortage of math science teachers. I'm looking at how our kids in this country supposedly are scoring below other kids in other countries in math science. When you bring in an expert, say someone who's been working for Cray or for Sperry, and he comes in with an applied mathematics or science background, an expert in computer simulation, for instance, and he decides he wants to become a teacher, maybe he got downsized or she got downsized. So someone with some real-life experience and major experience in applied mathematics and science, with a mentor who has watched him teach for a year, with a principal who has interviewed him and said, I like this guy, this or this person will not fit, he doesn't work with kids very well. No. I'm starting to wonder if it's not a good idea. Of course, I personally would rather have the bill restricted to math and science. Because that's it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the candidates for this program usually come into the math science field.
Thank you, Representative Wardlow. I appreciate that. And I don't think it was a question directed at Mr. Stanton, so I thank you, Mr. Stanton. Representative Erickson, if you could speak to that very quickly.
Thank you, Representative Diskins. I did want to clear up some misinformation. The Board of Teaching will set the standards. They have to develop the criteria for the program. That criteria will be developed based on the advisory board recommendations. The advisory board, again, I remind you, is superintendents, principals, teachers, and members of colleges of education and members of non-colleges of education. I think that's a great wealth from which to draw advice to develop criteria. Lack of support, this is a field-based program, so when the criticism comes that teachers leave the profession because of lack of support, this is one opportunity where there will not be lack of support. This provisional teacher going through this first year of classroom teaching will have support of the colleagues in that district, in that building, because otherwise the school board would not accept this kind of assignment. Representative Greiling, in the 2 years that I worked with the Board of Teaching, the board did not change membership one iota. They have now, but I have not approached them this year. So last year and the year before, when I approached them, same membership. In regard to the other alternative license, zero candidates. Zero. I repeat that. A bill that was enacted in the early 90s, no one has taken advantage of it. So I think maybe a new alternative is needed.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. For members of the committee, I do have an email that was sent to me last year from the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education, which did support this piece of legislation. Ms. Schwab.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Grace Schwab with Minnesota School Boards Association. We approach this bill with the continued thought of enhancing student achievement and student learning, and we feel that Representative Erickson's bill achieves that. It talks about some areas we've had some difficulty across the state finding good teachers. I think the bill recognizes that professional experience can be a bonus in the classroom. And keep in mind that a lot of teachers realize and learn their methods while on the job. I mean, we provide a lot of on-the-job training. I think that connection with students and being able to provide that high-quality program is our chief goal, and this just enables us to have a wider pool of candidates for kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schwab. We have one final question, Representative Seibert.
I'll go ahead and pass, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
That being said, seeing no further questions, Representative Erickson renews her motion that House File 2680 as amended be recommended to pass and be placed upon the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The bill is passed. Members, this committee stands adjourned.